everyone, it's Rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, wherever you are, and whenever you're listening to this, because you actually may not be listening to it during the evening hour at all. And that is part of the magic of Rated LGBT Radio. Tonight we are having a hot topic tonight. Brody and myself will be discussing a roster of things going on, two of which we highlighted, which was that, first of all, in New York City, the top cop of the city apologized for the police behavior that created the Stonewall riot. And of course, this is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. So we will talk about the significance of that. But also in Boston, there is a group of three individuals who have applied for the permit to do a straight pride parade. And that parade, if it happens, which, spoiler alert, it won't. But if it were to happen, spoiler alert, it won't, would be on August 31st. But, you know, don't mark the date because it won't happen. And we'll tell you why. And we're going to follow up with our on our show from last week. As you recall, we had a councilman from the Dublin, California City Council and a controversy there over a rainbow flag, and we will follow up on that. We have stories out of Sacramento, lots of other stuff. So without further ado, let's get right to it. And with that, I'd like to welcome to the show, Brody Levesque. How are you?
Good evening, Rob. How are you?
This has been a week. We weren't even talking about what's his botch over in Europe and D-Day and all that. But
God,
it's even been a week without him.
Yeah, no week without him, and he still managed to completely make a mockery of things while he was over there. He did an interview with Piers Morgan a couple days ago or yesterday, I believe, and it became relatively obvious he had no idea what he was talking about in terms of the trans military service plan that he, you know, tweeted about, and he was the one responsible for implementing all of the pseudoscience and medical nonsense he was throwing out at Piers Morgan. It came straight out of a white paper.
Can you back up on that? Can you go into that a little bit more? Because I confess, not my first thing on my thing to watch and run after is Piers Morgan, especially since I can only imagine that an interview between Piers Morgan and Donald Trump would be hard to listen to. What with Piers Morgan trying to talk up Mr. Trump's butt, which is where he seems to like to insert himself. So, pardon my French.
So what did
Trump say about transgender science?
Well, one of the things that he was asked about the trans military ban, and he just started spouting all of the pseudoscience, and then he said, you know, one of the reasons was that trans people take all these medications and that you couldn't have that, you know, in the military, and, you know, it went on and on and on, and the funny thing was a lot of the talking points that he was spouting out, we've actually seen before in a white paper that was issued by a very anti-gay group, the Family Research Council. So it was obvious that Tony Perkins and the crew at FRC, you know, probably had something to do with, you know, his talking points. But it just, it was that kind of ridiculousness. And then there was nonsense about the climate change guns. It was amazing. I mean, if anyone actually sat through and listened to that thing, you know, Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Essex, he more or less denied calling her nasty, but, you know, we have him on tape saying it. And then he just, you know, he kept digging himself a hole, you know. It's like, how bad and how deep do you want to dig this thing, you know? And it just, it was just incredible. And then he, Morgan asked him specifically about climate change, and Trump fired back with him. This is great. I believe that there's change in the weather, and I think it changes both ways. Okay, so, yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yes, yeah. There are nice people on both sides of climate change. I mean, it's like, I mean, the thing, and this kind of came out with the Mueller report about Donald Jr., and I actually heard this echoed through Chris Christie, and I'll start with that. Chris Christie did not believe that the Trump campaign had methodically colluded with Russia for one reason, because they were too stupid. In other words, the idea of collusion would take some level of strategic, you know, thinking and you know, planning and a level of intellect that Chris Christie did not think that group of people was in fact capable of. And I mean, I think he has a little bit of a point on that. It just, you know, it just sounds like on a lot of these subjects, Donald Trump is just way over his head. And I have to say, as I listen to different commentary, which I do frequently, of people who are his supporters, I listen to a lot of the conservative radio and everything else, the talking points have to be dumbed down in order for them to make sense of them in their, you know, in their narrative on this stuff. They cannot address a lot of the nuances on this. But Brody, I want to take us to our list of things to talk about tonight, which Trump really wasn't even on the list.
Well, I did want to mention, notwithstanding that today was the 75th anniversary of the Allied invasion of Europe and Normandy, and I am 100% positive that of the British, Canadian, and American troops, there were, you know, gay and probably queer servicemen in the invasion force that died. Some of them, I'm fairly certain, are buried at the American cemetery there on the cliffs above Omaha Beach. But I have a personal connection to that because my father was with the 3rd Canadian Infantry Division at Juneau Beach that morning. So for me, history is not really all that abstract. And with that, yeah, let's get to the list.
Well, wait, before you move on from that, I want to throw in a couple points. One, my dad was 17. I don't know about D-Day, but he was 17 and enlisted because of the war. He didn't actually get shipped overseas, so he was not there. But, yeah, I think we all have close generational ties to that event. But I'm glad you called out the potentially gay men who served, and I just want to identify how tightly closed the closet had to be for anybody who was gay or lesbian at the time, and point out somebody who is a significant factor in the winning of World War II, which was Alan Turing, who is a scientist in the UK, who literally, and they did a movie about it a few years ago, but he literally broke the code that potentially saved millions of lives and upended the Nazi strategy and regime because it broke through their intelligence. He was a gay man. He was later arrested for being gay. He was chemically castrated. and ended up committing suicide. And that was the fate of the men and women of that era who were LGBT, no matter what they gave, no matter what their service was. And that is a tragedy that we will probably not know the full depths of because they had to be in secret. So that's my two cents on your points. So,
no, that's fine. I mean, I always, like I said, I have walked through the silent rows of those crosses. The first time I was at that cemetery was when President Reagan was there and gave that very famous speech. You know, it really hits you as you're standing there and you're looking out at this ocean of white crosses and Stars of David's, intermixed in all of that. And then you understand, you know, the sacrifice. And like I said, for me, there was a personal connection because I actually walked Juno Beach where my own father had come ashore. And so it was a pretty big moment. But, you know, I was sitting there that first time, and I'll be honest with you, Rob, I literally, you know, I was closeted at the time. It was 1984. I kept wondering, you know, what it must have been like for the, you know, the gay GIs. You know, maybe, you know, one of them had a boyfriend or a love that was killed down, you know, on the water's edge or in the hedgerows behind, you know, as they were taking the German position. So it's a very sobering thought, you know, and it's something particularly today on the 75th anniversary of the invasion that, you know, we of that generation a lot.
Yeah, no, we absolutely do. And there's so much that that's what I say. It's like a secret history that we will not know some of the stories and some of the depth that happened. I mean, loved ones at home who had a lover and who died during D-Day. I mean, it was, you know, that those stories will never be told. They're, you know, we know they existed. We just don't know what they were. I want to transition here a little bit, speaking of stories told, refer back to our last show where we told the story of Dublin, California, where a controversy occurred over the suggestion that they raise the rainbow flag outside their city hall. And, Rody, I understand you have an update.
I certainly do. The city councils of both Dublin and Tracy, California, simultaneously voted this past Tuesday night to go ahead and fly the rainbow flag in recognition of Pride Month all month on the city flagpoles of both cities. And as you know, in Dublin, our guest last week, City Councilman Sean Cumagai, was instrumental in not only putting forth the proclamation for Pride Month, but also pushing hard for the flag. And as there was a huge kerfuffle about it, there was a lot of people that were uncomfortable. However, there was a lot of publicity generated from that. You know, we spoke with Sean. Kudos to the councilman for working his way through it with a very level head. And I was extremely pleased to see that particular East Bay city and its sister and the other city of Tracy will be honoring the LGBTQ community. And I think it's awesome that they were able to do that. I think part of the reason was that Sean was able to get his peers on the city council, including the mayor, to see, you know, the other perspective and the other point of view. And as he said to us last week on the air, you know, this is government speech, and government speech has to recognize all of the citizenry and make note of, you know, the keynote things for all of its citizenry, which in our case means pride. So hats off to the councilman and the mayor and the rest of the city of Dublin, California, and the city of Tracy, California. I think that's just absolutely incredible, and I think it's great.
I think it's great. I think it's a tribute to open dialogue and people talking and working things out and listening. I want to take that. There are a couple of stories that we wanted to deal with tonight. having to do with the police and discussions kind of in a global open dialogue thing. One having to do with New York City police, but also something just happened in Sacramento with the police participating in Pride. You want to take us through that, Brody?
Yeah, the there had been we'll do Sacramento first. Obviously, since we're a California show, let's do a California story. There had been a request made by the Pride Committee and the LGBT Center of Sacramento to Sacramento Police Department officers from the LGBTQ contingent to please not wear their uniforms for Pride, and that created an uproar. The center released a statement on its Facebook page, and I'm just going to read the one paragraph because it's really to the point. To honor the pain and marginalization of community members who have been harmed by police violence, we have asked the Sacramento police not to participate in uniform for the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. Now, I should note that part of the backstory to that request came from the fact that there had been two police shootings of unarmed black men in the city of Sacramento. So there were already tensions about that. There had been some violence used in arrests of sex workers, which were a couple were trans. Okay, so that caused problems. And then there was just a general discomfiture overall of the perception, you know, of police. And this is more across a broader range. Now, the Sacramento Department responded to that, and I actually spoke to Chief Hahn. This is what Chief Daniel Hahn's spokesperson said to me, though. And this was on Tuesday. The police department is disappointed that the LGBT Center does not want our officers attending public community events while in uniform. We support our officers who proudly serve our community on a daily basis. Our LGBT officers have worked very hard to earn these uniforms and should be proud to wear them. Now, this discussion had started actually in May. This is when the first requests were made. And so representatives of not only the LGBT Center, but also Sacramento's openly gay city councilman and Chief Hahn and his folks were going back and forth and back and forth. And even Mayor Daryl Steinberg got involved. And after some back and forth, they announced today that they had come to an agreement. And part of this agreement was hammered out by Councilman Steve Hansen, who I just mentioned, the openly gay council member for Sacramento, Chief Hahn's office, and also the folks at the center. And so essentially, the agreement they came out with was this, that the department officers, many of whom were LGBT, will be welcome in uniform. And then in turn, anyone who felt or does feel disenfranchised by law enforcement will have a platform in order to seek those improvements. And the platform is that the Sacramento Police Department made an agreement to set up a liaison for the community within its open task force and to work together with the center and others in the community, particularly in the LGBTQ community, to kind of iron out some of these differences, some of these problems. And as you pointed out with the situation with Councilman Kumagai and his crew down in Dublin, it was open dialogue. And I think that the work in Sacramento by the LGBT Center, I've got to give Sacramento's police chief a lot of props. Chief Hahn did an excellent job with this. I think the councilman's assistance was invaluable. And I think that it was just getting people to talk to each other and work with each other instead of just, you know, kind of yelling and screaming and that sort of thing. And this is an important step forward, particularly for a community like Sacramento, where, you know, you've had some problems there that, you know, including the shootings and the other things. And I think this is a good thing. So I'm very pleased to see that.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of what happened in Washington, D.C. last year at Pride when there was an actual confrontation over a similar issue of just demands of who be allowed in and not be allowed into the parade that didn't didn't seem to be terribly productive. It just seemed to be, a fire keg of confrontation. And this just feels much more productive and effective.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at this issue, I mean, in San Francisco Pride, the San Francisco Police Department are not only participate in a parade, but in a festival. In Los Angeles, LA Pride, which is going on right now as we speak, you've got the parade and the opening of the festival this weekend, and you will have not only LAPD officers, but you're going to have officers from all the surrounding jurisdictions to Los Angeles, including the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. They'll be participating, and they will be in uniform. So, it's one of those situations where it's kind of a give and a take. Now, for me, there's no certain amount of personal irony to this because my hometown of Toronto, Canada, there's been a huge ongoing contentious battle over allowing Toronto police officers to participate in Pride. So, yeah, and even our gay Toronto officers. It's become, very polarizing, which is kind of a good segue into an action that was taken by the commissioner New York City Police Department.
Right. Before you segue to that, though, I just want to share because we are going to talk about in just a second about what's happened in New York with the police upon the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. But if we dial back 25 years ago, which would have been in the early 80s in L.A., where I was attending L.A. Pride, the police at that point, they had to show up. They had to protect the crowd because L.A. Pride at that point, in 20 years in, 20 plus years in, had grown to be this huge, huge event. And so there was no choice, but the LA police had to be there to do their job. But the police there were, on the most part, obviously not happy about having to serve that. It was a growth time for them because it morphed from them having to show up and begrudgingly protect the crowd, do their job. Then they started recruiting LGBT people onto the force, and pretty soon the police started being actually in the parade. Their demeanor was changing, bridges were being built and everything else. So for me, at this point in time, to have sort of the myopic view, because I'm not being obtuse to the issues with profiling and police violence and those issues, but just to blanketly ignore the history of the growth of this relationship between the community and police department universally, I think would be a huge mistake. And kind of culminated in what happened today in New York. And Brody, if you want to tell us about that, I think that would be terrific.
Well, that had been a call, and a very loud call, for the police department of the city of New York to formally issue an apology for the actions of the 7th Precinct, the Borough Command, and the radio cars that night in front of the Stonewall Inn during the raid. The police, as was common for those types of raids, were fairly brutal. And this was, at that time in context, the norm. Use of billy clubs, pistol whipping, indiscriminate violence and physical assault as they arrested people, this, again, this contextually was the norm, particularly when the NYPD would raid a bottle club or a mafia-owned establishment, which is what the Stonewall Inn was. Also because of the fact that at the time, it was completely illegal for gay men to be together or to congregate. There was actually laws on the books in the city of New York that had to deal with it. Restaurants and bars and dance halls and any kind of establishment where the public would congregate could lose their licenses and have all sorts of issues. And back in those days, they called them the queer fairies, and it was a very derogatory term, not like we use it today. And they would go after them. It's interesting because I was doing research for a friend of mine, and I had the opportunity, this was a number of years ago, to interview a lot of the principals of the raid that night. And I actually spoke to New York NYPD Inspector Seymour Pine. Pine was the commander. He commanded the raid. He was the guy that actually had command of the cops. And he admitted that, you know, as typical of the time, lots of use of batons and lots of violence. And, you know, they were a little bit shocked when, you know, the gay folk fought back. But he, you know, even Pine admitted that things got really rough. So that's kind of the context of the background to it. So here we are 50 years later, and the commissioner of the NYPD, Commissioner O'Neill, apologized on behalf of not only the NYPD, okay, but, you know, anybody and everybody that was involved with the NYPD, not just for that night, because most people are aware of this, but some aren't, that the riots actually went on for 3 or 4 days. It wasn't just the one night. It literally went on for 3 or 4 days. And during that entire time period, there was a lot of brutal action going on. So the commissioner today actually got up there and held a press conference, and he apologized for the actions of essentially Inspector Pine and the borough command, the 7th and the other precincts that were there during that time period.
What do you think about that? What were your feelings about that apology?
The problem I have with a lot of these things is that, and this is due to me being a historian in addition to being a journalist, I tend to look at things in context of the time. You know, now that doesn't mean that I'm excusing behaviors, nor does it mean that I'm necessarily excusing certain actions by individuals or groups, but there has to be a historical understanding of the context of what the time period was. You know, you make progress in a forward motion if you understand the context of the history behind you. But I think that sometimes, and this is my own personal opinion, while it's fine to apologize, okay, the problem is that, you know, did anything get gained or learned in the 50 years since Stonewall in terms of how law enforcement and the LGBTQI community, you know, view each other? And that really is kind of quite the dichotomy of the situation altogether when you're doing these comparisons. I can remember very, very strong memories. I was in San Francisco the night of the White Night Riots, and I was there for the aftermath, and I was there to witness the violence by the San Francisco Police Department against the gay community, particularly at the Elephant Walk, the bar in the Castro. For me, it's context. It's context to the times. Do I think that it was appropriate for the commissioner to apologize? Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, the history books have been written and we need to learn from them, but I think that dwelling on that is not, it's just counterproductive. I think we need to learn from what we saw, what happened, the context of it. We need to apply those lessons to current and future and move forward. I'm not criticizing. I think it was wonderful that the commissioner of the NYPD
right.
did that. but I don't think at the end of the day, I'm just not sure it was necessary. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Contextually, was it really necessary? I don't know. I don't really think so. I think it was important, though, that the commissioner made the gesture, okay? Because sometimes healing does take that kind of gesture, and if the commissioner is willing to initiate the healing process, then okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, I hear you. Before our show, I talked a little bit about this subject with Bashdi Eldon, who is my co-host on Out in Santa Cruz, and he was pretty positive about the commissioner doing that. And his viewpoint, and I'm just sort of paraphrasing what I took from his feedback, was that the commissioner taking that effort sends positive information to people who are not as familiar with the history or the LGBT community. It's like he's taking a positive leadership stance towards, red state middle America that may not, be in touch with either the history or, sensitivity towards gay people. So it was a definite positive ripple. I think it was not without benefit that he did that. But I do see what you're saying, and my feeling about it wasn't actually, for them individually, I think it's fine, it's great that they apologize. Mm-hmm. But to your point, in the context of the bigger fabric of history and behavior, police departments, not just in New York, that wasn't non-characteristic, to your point, that, you experienced mm-hmm. that in a big way in San Francisco. I experienced it every small town and city that I was in, in the 80s, in the 90s. It was, I remember in Laguna Beach, which is today a very, LGBT-friendly little enclave in California, being hassled outside of there is a dance bar there that I was on my way to. I was completely sober at the time, and the police there were, they would hassle you in kind of minor ways. It's like in several gay neighborhoods, I would get stopped and hassled by police for jaywalking. And in mm-hmm. the case of Laguna Beach, I hadn't jaywalked at all. I was on the sidewalk. He accused me of not paying attention and walking through. I don't walk crosswalk, which I was totally sober. I knew exactly where I walked. And, that hadn't even happened. But it was like I got this huge dressing down. And the message was, by the police hanging out and doing this, was to discourage gay men from coming to those areas. I mean, they were there primarily to disrupt gay businesses and gay hangouts and all of that. So I appreciate the apology. And maybe it's the start of owning up to the oppression that was felt in a very big way and much broader way. But I also, in terms of New York, I kind of am not, I'm not regretful that they were the way they were that night, because if they weren't the way they were, there wouldn't have been the Stonewall riots. In other words, there wouldn't have been a reason to stand up and be visible and to fight and do that. And if we didn't have the fight, we wouldn't have had that initial gauntlet that created so much momentum for the LGBT, movement. So I'm not sorry that it happened, from a personal standpoint, and then owning up to a wrong that was, their forefathers in the police department committed, that's great. That's fine. And to Bash's point, that's a really good dialogue for straight people to think about. And by the way, Bash does say hello. He misses you, and you're cordially invited back on that show very soon. I miss your voice there.
Okay,
but you know, it's like from what you just talked about, from a historical perspective, I'm not sorry it happened. I'm not sorry it happened. We needed it to happen. If it hadn't happened there, it needed to happen somewhere.
Well, it and exactly to your point. And, you know, the other thing that I think oftentimes gets overlooked, you know, the focus right now is on Stonewall. But the truth of the matter is the very first upsets, if you will, didn't occur on the East Coast. They actually happened in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. I mean, there
right.
was later, you know, public demonstrations that took place in Philadelphia. In 1963, 64, 65, Dr. Frank Kamny and Jack Nichols and Lige Clark and Paul Kunstler and the early Washington Medicine Society, which included Barbara Giddings and Kay Van, Kay Tobin's, Kay Luthausen, you know, they protested in front of the White House. So it was a series of events. I think that what made Stonewall different was that it got media attention, and suddenly it became national, and for the first time. You know, what happened in Los Angeles, for example, the Black Cat didn't even raise any eyebrows, even with the Los Angeles Times or the then Los Angeles Herald, which was still publishing at the time. You know, and that was it. It was just L.A.-centric. By the same token, you know, what happened with the White Night Riots, because of Stonewall, probably got a little bit more national coverage than it would have had otherwise.
Right.
So
right.
Stonewall was important in terms of putting it on the radar screen, because now suddenly you could, you know, this was suddenly everybody knew. This is, you know, it went from, you know, a police raid on a mafia bottle club to, you know, a thing. It became a thing. You know, broadcast started covering it. It was the evening news. People were talking about it. And then less than a few years later, of course, you had Anita Bryant and the Save Our Children campaign, and the ball was, you know, was in motion. So I think in a lot of ways, it I'm like you. I mean, I'm glad that it occurred, because it finally squarely, for the first time, put the struggle for, you know, basic human dignity and human rights for same-sex couples and same-sex relationships directly on the map and on everybody's radar screen. And that, if nothing else, I think was critically important.
Right. Well, speaking of a group that wants their human dignity put on the radar screen, there are three individuals in Boston, Massachusetts, who desperately feel that the poor straight majority does not have that particular set of dignity afforded to them. And so they want straight people, because they think straight people have somehow fallen off the radar screen, to be put back on under the umbrella of what they're calling a straight pride parade that they have applied for a license for August 31st. And Brody, your feedback on that?
Well, it when we first heard about this, it you know, my initial reaction was, you know, God, here we go again. Particularly when I found out that one of the three is a gay Trump supporter, calls himself a gay Christian, a gay Republican, a gay this, a gay that. The other one, the principal organizer, has a little bit more of a sketchy background. He was involved with a couple of super uber right groups, including Resist Marxism, and these people are pretty fringy. And their politics get pretty ugly. As a matter of fact, today the Daily Beast actually did a profile piece on them, and I highly recommend to folks that this is a piece that you do need to read. It's the Daily Beast. It was published today, and the title is "Boston Straight Pride Parade is Even Worse Than You Think."
Right.
The two of them, not the gay guy, but the other two, are, you know, members of a fringe anti-everybody group, really far right. They don't, anti-Semitic. They, lots of white supremacy, lots of all sorts of other nonsense. These are not nice people. So it's again, and of course their cause is being picked up and bandied about by, Fox News. Gee, go figure. I'm not even going to mention her name. There's one particular host that, was just spouting all how this was needed, this, that, and the other thing. But, at the end of the day, what I found even more amusing, I didn't find it amusing from the standpoint of who the organizers are, because these people were, quite frankly, they're a little dangerous. What I thought was great, was the epic trolling they were getting on Twitter and Facebook. It was incredible. I unfortunately, right. Some of the tweets I can't even read you. They're that bad. But I mean, they were epic, and it was the ridiculous. And the other part of it was that they had used an image of the actor Brad Pitt for part of what they were doing, and Pitt's representatives found out about it, and then the actor found out about it, and he was actually upset. Okay, and enough to tell them, quit using my image. Okay. Even better was Chris Evans, who, as you know, is the Captain America in the Marvel series. His tweet I am going to read because this is epic. Chris, by the way, is a Boston native. Now, Chris also, his younger brother is gay. So for Chris, he's got kind of a familiar stake in this. Here's his tweet, and this thing's great. Okay. He was responding to the Washington Post. The Washington Post said, it's LGBT Pride Month, but these three guys in Boston want a permit for a straight pride parade, right? So here's Evan's response. Wow, cool initiative, fellas. Just a thought. Instead of a straight pride parade, how about this? The desperately trying to bury our own gay thoughts by being homophobic because no one taught us how to access our emotions as children parade. What do you think? Two on the nose? I will give Captain America, the last word.
Well, here's part of the deal on this. Mm-hmm. It's like, This will never happen. First of all, Boston hasn't even agreed to it. But should even Boston agree for it to happen, it won't. First of all, the precedent of these anti-gay events is dismal. I'm recalling the several events that they tried to have with there were events that they had in Washington, D.C. where it was supposed to be the ex-gay march, of which I think all of 15 people showed up for. This I anticipate, should it happen, we'll have a similarly dismal, minute contingency. But second of all, the guys behind this have a history of being pot stirrers and not event organizers. And having just come off the organization of such an event, I can tell you it takes a lot of work that has nothing to do with ideology just to pull off something like this. They're not going to do it. It won't happen. Mm-hmm. It just absolutely will not see the light of day. But the other thing is just, and this is why I think the Twitter storm went crazy, because on my other radio show, we broadcast on essentially the conservative station in town, and a lot of the people who listen to us are part of that broader conservative audience, and we do get calls, and a recent call that we got was a woman calling in, and she said, well, what about straight pride? And it's like, you're welcome at pride. That's, pride is about, any individual embracing their true, authentic self. RuPaul was on The View today, and they talked about this subject. And his point was that pride was developed to set apart from the shame that had been handed to the LGBT people for so long. And this was to assert their pride to get release from shame. And he said that the real antidote to shame is not really pride. The real antidote to shame is love. And everybody is deserving and capable and, you know, can take ownership over love, including straight people, of which they really have forever. That's the point. You know, I mean, the real point of no straight pride is what we who are LGBT, and every time this question gets brought up to us, which I think every single one of us has had to answer it in one way or another, which is, number one, straight people don't have pride days because every day is straight pride day. Every day, you know, straight people show up to work. They're not fired. They're not, you know, in threat of losing their job because of who they are. They get to put their family and their loved ones and everything on their desk, and always have. They've always been, they've never been shamed for who they have been loving, you know, in terms of who they are. So that alone is a reason that it is, quote unquote, always Pride Day for straight people. But the other thing that has been said is, you know, be thankful that there isn't a straight Pride Day, because it means you didn't need one. You didn't have to bring yourself up from that. And so, you know, it is not a horrible thing that you know, you haven't had that as part of your legacy. And the third thing is, show up to Pride. It's for you too. You don't have to be, you know, part of a, you know, have a letter in the acronym of LGBTQI, et cetera, to show up for Pride. Show up, be Pride, be happy, be your authentic self. You deserve to be there as much as anybody else.
I absolutely agree. Since we're on the subject of Pride, I'd like to give a shout out to two prides occurring this weekend that I am personally connected with. First and foremost, to all of our listeners and friends in Washington, D.C., happy Capitol Pride. And for my friends and folk in Los Angeles, happy Pride L.A. So that covers both coasts.
Yep.
I'm just bi-coastal.
Well, I have, yeah, from a personal standpoint, because we just celebrated Pride in Santa Cruz. And I was part of the committee behind that pride. We had several singing artists, one of which is near dear to you and my heart, which is Brody Ray of America's Got Talent, performed like a champ out there for the Santa Cruz audience. Also, on a personal level, it was kind of a unique pride for me, because both of my sons, who have been to Pride when they were little, you know, they came to the parade, they saw it, you know, sort of took it in. You know, they've shown up in different ways in the past. But this year, they both, without me asking, said they were going to Pride. Their friends were all going to Pride. They came down, helped set Pride up. My two sons have very different personalities. One is Mr. Social and was bopping around town with his friends and doing all sorts of things. So after he helped set up, I'm not sure I saw him until that evening. My other son, who has a girlfriend, hung out with me, helped with the sound at the stage, and he and his girlfriend, during Brody Ray's performance, were waving LGBTQ flags and taking in the whole thing. And were big participants. And so that was kind of a unique, just personal thing. I don't know that I had a point in sharing that, other than I think there are things that happen during Pride season that get very personal for each one of us.
Oh, absolutely. Pride is something that I think should always be a takeaway from Pride, and that is not the fact that it is a, you know, massively huge block party and celebration, but I think it should be more a thing where we embrace the spirit of Pride, that now, because of what happened 50 years ago and what happened over 50 years ago in Los Angeles and other places, and, you know, 40 odd years ago in San Francisco, that we have the ability now to be able to, you know, participate as a community openly, and to be, you know, in a space and in a place where, you know, we're really in the comfort zone. And I think that's really kind of critically important. Pride is more than just a huge block party. Pride is a celebration of ourselves. It's a celebration of our identities, all of them within the acronym. Whether you're a lesbian or bi or gay or trans or queer or intersex, you know, that's, you know, this is who we are. And I think that Pride should always be that. And, you know, it's also one of the things where I love it when people come to Pride who are not part of the rather large community that makes up the LGBTQI acronym, but, you know, they're straight people too, and, you know, everybody comes because it's more about a family of humanity at that point. And I think that's the most valuable thing about Pride. But, you know, that said, you know, we still have a long way to go, and we still have our detractors. We saw that again today, or this week rather, in New Jersey. We have another state like California, which has now mandated that the state, you know, educational systems teach LGBTQ history. And of course, the conservative organizations and the folks on the right who don't care for us too much, including Len Deal of the New Jersey Family Policy Council, you know, they're saying that it takes power away from parents, and it encourages kids to question their sexuality, and it in Dio's case, it infringes on parents' rights, and, you know, it's the same old tired tripe. But it directly is related to Pride, because of the fact that I think it's important that kids, straight, queer, gay, lesbian, doesn't matter, know the history and know the people, like as you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, who are critically important, not just to the history of the community, but to, you know, the community of mankind as a whole. Dr. Turing was also known as the father of modern computing. And
right.
So I think that this is one of the things that this is really important. Yeah, and the fact that you still have people like this deal at the Jersey Family Policy Council, you know, that's infringing on parents' rights. No, it's infringing on people's rights to be bigots, I would say. I don't know if you really have a right to be a bigot. I guess you do. But that's maybe the only thing it's infringing on, is keeping you from being a jerk, you know, or spreading
right.
lies, deceptions, and, you know, pseudoscience. I don't know. But this is,
well,
you know,
I think,
and again,
I think
this is
point,
what we're doing.
Yeah.
Know?
Right. And but I think that point is, it needs to be looked at, because obviously we've dealt with it in California when that law was being placed, you know, on the books here.
Uh-huh.
And there was a move to try to put an initiative on the ballot against that to try to remove it. They failed. You know, but the you know, the discussion, the verbiage, and, you know, the concepts were all being thrown. And it comes down to a question of whether you can have an opinion about who someone else is and erase who they are from history because you don't want your children to be taught that they existed. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. It's like and this goes, you know, to that bigger question of quote unquote religious freedom, where, you know, it isn't about people being able to practice their own religion. It's like what happens
when their religion looks at a group of people and says, these people simply cannot be, you know, as they are, that you know, our religion mandates that they cannot be who and what they are. That is the quote-unquote belief. So you have a question of what is versus something that people want to believe and erase. And that's, you know, that's the crux of the philosophical question behind it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I mean, hats off to New Jersey for signing that law and mandating it. I think it's important because, you know, at the end of the day, to paraphrase the NBC commercial, the more you know. But it's true. I think the more that you know about, you know, other people, other cultures, other societies, you know, the better off that you're going to be. And I get the religious freedom part of it, but I think that we need to stop the religious freedom at the water's edge when it starts negatively impacting and causing harm. And this has always been my biggest problem with it. And to that, I have one last thing. Go ahead.
Okay, well, go for it, because we only have a few minutes.
Well, I was going to mention that in Alabama, we had a mayor, okay, Lily White, Christian mayor, that says, you know, he made a comment that he thought it would be, you know, okay if, you know, gay people, you know, were killed. And at first he dug his heels in and, you know, it's a private comment, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, finally, you know, today he came forth, and I'm quoting the mayor, it's Mayor Chambers. I alone am responsible for the comment that was made. Although I believe my comment was taken out of context and was not targeting the LGBT community, I know it was wrong to say anyone should be killed. Well, you know, it's hindsight's 20/20, Mr. Mayor. Sadly, you're not going to lose your office over this, but I am seriously hoping that the next go around, you know, even though it's Alabama, that the voters take a hard look if they really want you representing that city again.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's, I hope people look at their own rhetoric and think about what they're actually saying. You know, I hope he has a, pardon the expression, come to Jesus moment over this. You know, because what he said was unconscionable, but I don't think he thought out the logic of what his sentiment was, you know, and I think that's dangerous. So, that's pretty much it for us for this week, Brody. We have exhausted our hour, and I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We will be back again next week with another hopefully entertaining and intriguing show with LGBTQ issues. You can find us here. Also, listen to Out in Santa Cruz on Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That is on www.ksco.com. And I want to thank Brody for his incredible insights and to say research is an understatement, his knowledge and expertise and all that he does. And I want to thank our listeners again for tuning in. We appreciate you. We want to hear from you, subjects you want to hear about, and guests who want to be on here. We appreciate those conversations very, very much. So for all of us at Rated LGBT Radio, we bid you a very good night, and we will talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.